Because the question I want to ask tonight is, how do you create an epidemic? How do you create a shift, a radical and rapid shift in the mindsets and behaviors of a mass number of people? Well, we all know how to shift it within ourselves. We all know we can shift it by changing focus or physiology. We certainly can shift it by changing language. We've learned about the six human needs that drive all human behavior and how people get lined up in vehicles. We have an enormous amount of knowledge in that area. But if we were going to shift to this other side, we'd have to say, if we wanted to see what shifts a stock market, it's the same thing that shifts our inner lives. It's emotion, fear, and greed, right? But these waves of emotions that stock markets drive, that drives entire economies throughout the world, those waves of emotion are usually influenced by very small factors. You know, it's going along, going along, going along. We hear a bunch of news, and all of a sudden, boom, there's a big change, up or down. There's a moment when it goes from vanilla to chocolate, from a bull market to a bear market, a stock that everybody's buying to everybody's selling. And rarely is it the moment we expect, because if that was true, we'd all be unbelievably more wealthy than we already are. But what happens is we're not usually aware of the tipping points, what really shifts them. So whether it be a stock market or whether it be what tips technology, what tips fashion. I'll give you a simplistic example. I know about 2 years ago, I have a clothier who works with me, and he comes and does stuff, and he's been, since Sage entered my life, I've become more and more casually driven, so he's been more and more unhappy with me because I buy less and less clothing from him. But I remember one day he came to me, and he always comes and he brings me like 10 pairs of shoes and 10, you know, all these different things to pick out. And the only thing the only place I can get them is through him. He's found me the right places because I wear a size 16 shoe. So when he comes in, he goes, you got to get these shoes. He said, I really want you to get these shoes, and I'm going to have them custom made for you. They're unbelievable. And I said, what are they? And he said, Hush Puppies. Now, who knows what Hush Puppies are? I'm curious. Raise your hand. Do you remember Hush Puppies when you were a kid? Now, Hush Puppies have been out of style for about 20 years, right? 15 years. In fact, in 1994, the Hush Puppy Company, which is part of a larger conglomerate, the company that makes Hush Puppies, only sold 30,000 units worldwide. 30,000 units worldwide. But 1 year later, they sold 530,000 units. Think about that. From 30,000 to 530,000, and they didn't do any more advertising. They didn't do any new marketing. They didn't do anything. It just happened to them suddenly. And what happened was a group of kids in the East Village of New York City started going out and wearing Hush Puppies. They were wearing them at clubs. They were wearing them for the very reason no one else would, because no one would wear them, right? So that made them what? Different, which is another word for cool, right? Or I should say hip. Very different things, right? Hip people do it before anybody else does it. So these kids wore these shoes. Now, how does that translate into 18 months later, a company literally being revived and within 2 years selling 1 million pairs of shoes all over America in malls to kids that would never wear them in 1 million years normally, and adults as well? That translation is a tipping point. Mass number of people's behavior shifts instantly and suddenly. Happens in fashion all the time. Happens in stock markets all the time. Where else does it happen? Music. Less rapidly, though, in music, doesn't it? It happens less often in music, but it definitely happens in music. Where else does it happen? Relationships. It's going so well, you thought. Right? Suddenly you have this little wake-up call that it isn't where you really thought it was, or one of the partners has this wake-up call. But really, it's been going on for a while, right? There's just a moment when it tipped, where suddenly everything changed, where all of a sudden the whole thing shifted. Does it happen in technology? How many remember hearing about fax machines and thinking, you know, what would I get a fax machine for? Does anybody remember this? I always buy things when they're brand new. I can't figure out how the hell to work one, but I buy them anyway because it's really cool, right? So I'm one of those early adopters. So sure enough, within 6 months, everybody had a fax machine, right? Remember people used to use Federal Express to send letters? And then all of a sudden, like, that was gone. What happened? What happened is there was a tipping point. It shifted so rapidly where in the first year that Sharp, and Sharp was the first manufacturer to put them out, when Sharp first put out fax machines, they sold 80,000 units the first year. That was it. Because who the hell are you going to send a fax to? Nobody else had one. But sure enough, within a couple of years, I think it was 2 years, they sold 1 million. And a year later, they sold 2 million. Why? Because you got to critical mass. You got to a point where everybody had them. And so now, unlike most things in our past, where scarcity equals value, we live in a world now where maximum numbers tends to equal value. Software that can be given to millions of people rather than gold or land that's limited to a few. living in a different world where a tipping point is driven by a mass number of people beginning to adopt something. So it happens in technology. Cell phones. When did cell phones tip? Mid-1990s. Remember when cell phones used to be like the size of like, you know, bigger than a walkie-talkie? I had one of those original ones. I thought it was so cool. One of those Motorola ones, you know? Remember those? And then they got smaller and smaller. And when they really hit was in the mid-1990s, like 1995. That's when they shrunk in size. And that's when the service got good enough that you could really use it anywhere you went. That's when you could travel with the same cell phone across the United States and the vectors or sectors would change on their own. Changed instantaneously. And now what's happening? People are now making their cell phone their primary phone, right? They don't, and you also see all over America, at least, and good parts of Europe, it's hard to find a pay phone anymore. They don't exist there. Who needs a pay phone when everybody's got a cell phone? They can't make any money with a pay phone anymore. Total shift, overnight, instantaneous. I remember coming home one night in 1994, and I was living in the Del Mar Castle, and I went up there, and I'd been someplace, I forgot where it was. I came back, and I had just worked with President Clinton. And he invited me, it was December of 1994, right at Christmas time. He invited me to come to see him at Camp David to coach him. He was going through a tough time. So I was there and I'm coaching him. And while I was there coaching him, I was talking about how we could stay in touch. And I said, have you done this online thing yet? And he said, well, I've heard about it. I said, well, there's this thing called America Online. I said, I just got on it last week, but it's actually really cool to use. And we could send emails to each other. I'm telling us the President of the United States. He has no email. This is 1994. The White House had no email service, 1994. We forget how rapidly the world has tipped as far as the web is concerned. We're talking about something that 9 years ago, for the most people, there was no web. There was no connection. Now, how would you live without it, most of us? Now, any question virtually on the face of the earth about anything, you get the answer to about anyone, about any subject, in a matter of seconds. Now, with Wi-Fi, you don't have to go anywhere. In San Diego County now, you can be anywhere in the county, and if you have this little thing in your computer, you're not hooked up to anything. You don't have to have it in your computer, you know, your business or in your home. You can be in a taxi, you can be in a car, you can be anywhere in San Diego County. You got Wi-Fi, and you're hooked to the internet in high speed instantaneously, not wired to anything. Of course, that'll be everywhere on Earth soon, right? You'll be anywhere on the Earth and be able to answer to anything that exists. And I remember talking to the president saying, you know, you really got to check this thing out. And then I came home like 2 days later, and I typed in my name. This is like, I don't know, 3 days after I'd been with Clinton. And boom, came up the night before. This was like midnight in San Diego. The next morning's newspaper, and by searching my name, it was the cover of the paper saying that I had coached the President of the United States, which was private. It was in the Washington Post. That's how I found out that it was coming out in the paper. By finding it by a little search on AOL, the first time I ever did a search on AOL under my own name. So that's the shifts that can happen. That's how rapid they can happen. So the question is, what makes those happen? And tonight what I want to do is I want to stimulate you. But at the same time, what I really want to do after we kind of dump some of these stories and examples in is I really want to get you thinking. And hopefully for the rest of the trip, you can be thinking about this. Whether you're socially driven, you say, God, there's something I really want to make go. Years ago, someone touched my life, most of you know. They delivered some food to my house when I was 11 years old, completely changed my life. When I was 17, I started a process. That process went. It was me doing 2 families, next year 4 families, next year 8 families. Next year I got 4 or 5 friends. It was 4 or 5 because it was 5, but only 4 really did anything, you know. Then it grew a little bit with my company. And 2 years ago, we hit the tipping point, fed 1 million people between Thanksgiving and Christmas in 9 countries. That's unbelievable to think it started with me feeding 2 families. But it hit a tipping point. It started to grow, and there's reasons why it grew. So whether it's a social process, or whether it's music that you want to spread, or movies, or your business, it's going to be the same principles. So the question is, what are those principles? Well, the best place to find them is to look at an epidemic. Come back and model it in terms of virology. The word tipping point comes from virology. The idea that, you know, you have a certain amount in your body of a virus or of a bacteria, and there's a point, though, of point of no return, where all of a sudden your body begins to break down. And in a virus, they look at several different things that they think make a virus spread. Who knows what those components would be? What are the components that cause something to become an epidemic? Proximity. Proximity to what? To a carrier, right? There are certain people who supposedly spread a virus or a bacteria more than others. These are people who get around, right? These are people who have a lot of impact. They interact with a lot of people. If you look at SARS, and I personally don't believe in the theory that most people have talked about, nor do a lot of scientists now, but if you look at SARS, they believe a small number of people spread this to the whole rest of the world. So if you use that as a metaphor, that's also true about how anything happens. The first thing you got to understand is it doesn't take a lot of people to spread something to whole earth. It takes the right people, people that are connected in the right way. What's another criteria for spreading an epidemic if you thought about it as a virus or bacteria? Most people think in those terms. The environment. Certain environments affect things more than others. Certain things are going to spread in a hot environment. They're not going to spread in a cold environment, right? So the context or the environment itself plays a significant role. What else would be a factor that would affect, you know, the spread of something, if you're thinking of something of this, creating an epidemic? Talked about the factor of the people that do it spreading, the communicators, those who have a lot of access, the type of environment it's in. What else? There has to be a vulnerability or an opening. How else would you describe that vulnerability or opening? There's a susceptibility, and that would be a simple way of describing a need. There's clearly a need, and that would probably be at the top of the list. Or in the case of a virus, a susceptibility, you would say a weakness, right? And when we're talking about human beings, in most cases, we'd be looking at a need, and the need might be a psychic wound. For example, if you look at the history of revolutions, most revolutions have been driven by a small number of people. Whether it be the revolution that happened in the Soviet Union, whether it be the revolution that happened here. I was talking today to one of our guides, and I was saying, where was the tipping point here in China for the communists taking over this country? And he said, actually, the communists were being beat up. They were being destroyed by the Nationalist Party at that time. They were only 30,000 communists in a country now that's 1.3 billion, whatever it was then. It's still a huge country. 30,000 communists. He said who saved them was the Japanese. Because when the Japanese came and started attacking, the communists said, listen, we can't fight each other. Let's all work together. And it saved the communists from being destroyed. And then all of a sudden, everybody's working together to stop the Japanese, and it created a tipping point. They described there are certain battles that created a tipping point. But it was a small number of people that changed this entire country. Mao, obviously, the leader of that process.